The companions braced themselves as they got close. The layers of netting blocked only pieces of the hellish scene. Keyed up for battle, this only spurred them on faster, and soon the group dashed around the last net. The area was a kitchen with big stone tables lined with battered pre-dark chairs made of rusty chrome and plastic fabric. A dank hole in the corner reeked of human waste, and on the opposite wall was a tortured, large man, his arms and legs spread out on netting and tied securely in place. A joyous group of Kenny women were running the tips of steel knives along his body, slowly cutting off the remains of his tattered clothing and leaving countless tiny cuts in his skin, rivulets of fresh blood trickling into bowls on the floor.
Fuck you!
One of the Kennys reached for his pants. In a lightning-fast move, Jack flipped his hand. The Kenny dropped her knife, Jack's throwing blade buried into the back of her throat. The others quickly turned. Ryan stepped forward, and two more fell away. The rest separated fast. One woman reached into a pouch hanging low at her side and threw a handful of the contents upward. As if a switch had been thrown, the green light from the moss winked out, leaving the area in near total darkness.
What the fuck?
Moving fast, the companions rushed away from the spot where they had just been, so the Kennys couldn't find them. JB sent a burst from the Uzi into the darkness. The strobing muzzle flash briefly illuminated the kitchen.
It's about to hit the fan.
Place your shots, people. We're not leaving without her.
Christy spun. She cut down a Kenny who had been trying to sneak close from behind. The man clutched his belly and staggered away, mortally wounded, but not dead yet. Christy forced herself to not finish him off. They were going to need every round. And if it came to that, the very last was reserved for herself.
Need a flare? Don't have any. No, wait, I do!
Suddenly, light returned to the cavern in blue intensity. JB was holding what looked like a road flare. Only the top was a dancing blue flame of unusual strength. Caught in the light, a teenage female Kenny started. She charged, waving knives in both hands, her pointed teeth glimmering in the blue light. Ryan stood his ground. The prisoner's eyes darted to the right.
Spear!
Her hair flexing madly, Christy suddenly stepped to the left as a spear came out of the darkness. The shaft went by, just missing her, and Jack ducked under it.
Baron Taggart?
We're not from your baron.
Ryan fanned the netting with gunfire. We could only hope the wild shots didn't kill Mildred.
We're after a black woman. Short, military fatigues, beaded hair.
I know where.
Yeah. Okay.
Ryan slashed out with his pump gun to cut away the netting. Coming free, the big man fell to the floor, landing on top of a dead Kenny. He rose to his knees with the Kenny's knife in his hand and proceeded to stab her again and again in the chest.
Yeah, you like that? Look! Want more? I got you more, bitch! Now you sing for me! Sing for me!
Come on, man, cut the shit. Take us to our friend, or we'll leave you here alone. Got me?
As Christy and JB took out another charging group of Kennys armed with spears, the big, former prisoner stared at Ryan in wild fury, then slowly nodded and stumbled to his feet.
This way.
He headed across the kitchen to go out the only opening in the wall nets. As the companions followed after him, JB passed Ryan a half-used flare and started another. Ryan moved to the point position, and JB took the rear. They had fought in darkness before and knew the basic tactics. Spread out your lights, don't give the enemy a group target, and keep moving at all costs. In the passageway, the nameless man paused, then turned to the left, then quickly to the right again. Ryan had to move fast to keep abreast, but only went a few yards before the former prisoner darted into a side passage. The room inside was lined with dark cloth, rendering it nigh invisible in the dim green light from the ceiling moss. The posts were covered with rusty chains and shackles. There were two prisoners here, and one was Mildred.
Millie, thank God!
Placing aside the flare, Ryan went to work on the lock. Mildred looked to her side.
Kill her, please.
Gaia.
The other prisoner was a stark naked woman, hanging from her arms. But both of her legs were gone. The horrible stumps, scarred with burns, obviously made to prevent death from blood loss. The mindless person in the chains looked at the companions without comprehension. Her sad eyes, pools of madness, a string of drool dripping from her slack mouth.
It's all over. You're free now.
Christy aimed the hot barrel of her wheel gun to the prisoner's temple.
Thank you.
Done. Lurching away from the post, Mildred half fell into JB's arms, and the couple embraced for a long moment before finally parting.
Oh, God, I'm happy to see you all. Now give me a motherfucking blaster. I've had it with caddies.
Got your six, Millie.
Thanks, John.
Four up the pipe and six on the strap.
Not nearly enough, but it'll have to do. Hey, who the hell is this?
The man to whom she referred stood nervously near the opening in the net that served as a doorway.
Carl, second sec boss for Lady Tregart of Thunderville. Please, we must leave before...
What the...
Not a doubt.
Are you sure, Jack?
Something muty.
Carl started to leave, but then his knees buckled.
Oh.
The blood-covered man slid weakly to the floor. Passing Christy the sputtering flare, Ryan grabbed him by the arm, draped it over his shoulder, and stood, carrying most of the weight.
There you go.
Thanks.
Carl reeked of blood and sweat. There was something else. Machine grease and shine. Was this one of the sec men sent to find the lost drone?
Start walking.
Carl did his best to keep pace as Ryan took the middle position in the group. With Christy in the lead now, the companions started for the exit, ruthlessly killing anything they saw moving. Something vaguely animal-like charged at the group from the other side of the net. JB riddled it with blaster fire. In the concrete cave, a canny dropped from the ceiling and managed to land among them. Mildred was ready. Reaching the brick-lined tunnel, the companions raced along the rock and sand floor using Ryan's marks, while JB lit a fuse and dropped a homemade pipe bomb in their wake. The deadly shrapnel charge of nails caught several of the cannies.
It's collapsing! Hurry up, people!
Moving fast, the companions raced through the end of the collapsing tunnel and rushed into the water. Carl suddenly went limp in the water.
Shit!
Ryan holstered his piece and slung the big man over his shoulder. He pinched Carl's nose and mouth shut, then dove, swimming for the glow of sunlight ahead. He only hoped Doc was still there, and that they weren't heading straight into another group of cannies. With a large coil of blackened copper tubing slung over his shoulder, Sandra Tregart started to walk along the dried riverbed toward the Angel. Spinning, Sandra drew a blaster.
Dust!
She had stayed too long, and the smell of fresh blood had attracted the attention of some howlers. The muties were on their way, right now.
Shit!
Dropping the precious tubing, Sandra raced for the biplane and jumped into the cockpit, throwing the blaster to the floor. At least her tanks were full again from a few containers of shine that hadn't been burned in the wreckage. Sandra's hands trembled as she swiftly operated the controls.
Shit! 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 Come on! Come on! Come on!
The Angel started rolling along the hard ground, and Sandra caught a glimpse of something moving on the raised bank.
Fucking howler!
The head of the mutie was split in two. Or maybe there were two heads, along with multiple limbs that writhed bonelessly. It was an accepted fact that howlers ate everything that came their way. They were the scavengers of the Deathlands, and as far as she knew, nobody had ever succeeded in killing one. The Angel started to roll forward. The howler started for the aircraft.
Jesus! Come on, you old rust bucket!
Sandra held her breath as the biplane went straight past the onrushing howler, its multiple limbs lashing out for the wing. Thankfully, the ropey tentacles missed. Sandra yanked back on the joystick and fought to get the Skywag airborne. The wheels finally left the ground. Sandra fell back into the seat. Climbing high, she felt oddly at ease until her growing proximity to the toxic death clouds began to burn her skin.
Oh, shit!
She dropped over 100 feet.
Shit! Shit! Shit!
The ground steadily rose to greet her.
Shit! Oh, shit!
She was at last able to settle and start looking for landmarks to find her way home. The clouds she could understand. Rad and Kems were a normal part of life, but she never wanted to see another howler.
I'm never landing in that shithole desert again, ever, under any circumstances.
Suddenly, she felt a little embarrassed and decided she needed to do something, anything, to take away the bitter taste of defeat. Checking the gauges, she saw that she had enough fuel to do a pass over that nest of stickies down the Ojai River and blow apart the rickety old bridge they used to cross over.
Yeah, triple smart, Sandra Traeger.
Putting her back to the sun, Sandra settled in for the long flight. And maybe on the way back, she'd strafe the howlers just for good measure. But the thought sent a shiver down her spine.
Oh, then again, maybe not.
Waking suddenly, Carl bolted upright, his hands clawing at the air. Mildred wiped his face with a damp cloth.
Easy now, easy. You're free now. You're out of the caves.
Carl looked around frantically. He was in the back of a wag, surrounded by boxes and canvas bags. The sand dunes were moving past the windows. Another wag moved alongside the one he was in. The other painted as black as midnight. And a busty redhead was riding some kind of a two-wheel machine. Carl had never seen anything like that before. Checking his wrists, he saw bloody cloths there and realized that they were bandages. He really was free and alive.
You did...
Careful now.
Taking the top off a canteen, Mildred passed it over to the man.
Thank you.
His eyes went wide at the taste, and he slowed, savoring it. A small trickle of the excess flowing down his chin.
Blast me to hell. Clean water. Like that mountaintop snow we once melted. Got no taste of iron. Nothing. Haven't had that for years.
JB turned from the passenger seat, thumbing fresh rounds into an empty clip for the Uzi.
There's more if you want. Food, too, if you think you can stomach any.
The very idea of eating made his stomach rebel, and Carl vehemently shook his head. Sitting behind the steering wheel, Ryan gave no reaction to the expected response. Carl gingerly touched the strips of white cloth binding his chest. They were damp with something that smelled like shine.
Now what's the purpose of that?
What was that?
Nothing. You got me free?
Yeah. Seemed the thing to do.
Did Baron Tregert send you? You folks' mercies?
Doc and Jack were in the Black Hummer just to the side, with Christy covering the point in the BMW motorcycle. It seemed to Ryan that she was checking the dashboard a lot. It gave no other sign that there was anything wrong with the two-wheeler.
What ville are you from?
Thunderville. Got us the best damn baron in the world. Why, she...
Carl suddenly became aware of the look of concentration on their faces.
Where are you folks from?
Doesn't matter. Just around. So, what can this baron do?
Nothing special.
Carl glanced out the rear window. He caught a fleeting glimpse of the green oasis and swaying groove of bamboo trees before they were gone.
Where are you... we... going?
Away from here? The Kennys must have a back door, and they're gonna be looking for some payback. You know any way across the Ojai River?
The Ojai? Not for wool rags this big. What's on the other side? Your ville?
Something like that. We got over before, but those mutants were after us, so we had to blow up the bridge. We used the jetsam to cross.
Wow. Blew a bridge to make a bridge.
Pretty much.
Triple smart. Well, if you're trapped on this side anyway, take me back to Thunderville. Lady Tregert will pay you a lot to get me back.
Takes care of her own, huh?
We are her children. We would die for her.
Well, we got no objection to making some extra jack.
JB glanced in the rearview mirror to lock eyes with Mildred. She gave a silent nod.
Sounds like a deal. So how do we get there?
Carl gave him directions, then settled against the soft canvas bags, allowing himself to relax while listening to the sound of the pre-dark engine. His mission had been to find the demon so that it could be destroyed. That had been done. Now he should return to Thunderville. But the man wasn't sure how happy Lady Tregart would be about him arriving with a heavily armed group of Outlanders. True, they had saved his life, but even warring barons saved each other's segment from Canny's if it was possible. And he had shown them where their friend was hidden. Had he already paid his debt? Or did he owe them more service? Just how much was his life worth? Time passed, and finally the war wag rolled off the shifting sands and dropped a few feet onto a dried riverbed. Carl stiffly sat upright, coming out of a deep sleep.
We're here already? But that can't be. It took us all day on horseback to get here.
You've been out for an hour, and these wags go a hell of a lot faster than a horse.
Guess so. We got wags, but nothing like these.
Not even a baron?
For a split second, Carl thought JB was going to kill him, but then saw that he was staring at something they had just passed on the raised bank. When Carl looked, there was nothing in sight. JB adjusted his wire-rimmed glasses.
Dark night. What the nuke in hell was that?
Didn't get a wreck. Was it a sticky? Or have the Cannies found us?
I have no idea.
Hey, look there!
Shit! Hit it, Ryan!
Smoke was rising from over the horizon, and as the motorcycle and two Hummers raced closer, the companions could see some dark objects on the ground.
Somebody got jacked.
Those were homemade distillation units.
A shine convoy? Who would bomb that? You'd lose all the juice.
Copper tubing. They must have been hauling tubing. She wanted more, so she just aced them and took it.
Your baron did this?
Dumbly, Carl nodded, his thoughts swirling.
The one with the biplane?
How do you know that word?
Well, it is a biplane.
That's Doc and Jack.
I wonder what they want.
Christy drove alongside Ryan.
Get sharp, lover. From this distance, I don't think they're norms.
Ryan checked the Sig Sauer at his side.
Right.
There was a group of humanoids walking down the middle of the riverbed a short ways ahead of them. They were the right height for norms. Aside from that, Ryan really couldn't make out any details. It was the damnedest thing. The thing seemed to be smoking, or surrounded by some kind of mist that traveled along with them.
Those are howlers!
Are you sure, Carl?
Turn around! Run for your lives! Don't let them get close!
Incoming!
Christine pulled out her gun and peeled away. Jack accelerated the other Hummer, and Doc leaned out the window to level his Lamar. But the hit howler only staggered from the mini-ball, and lashed out with its collection of tentacles. Veering wildly, Jack slammed the Hummer into the embankment to get away. The detachable roof came off to fall behind, still in the grasp of the misty howler. Immediately, JB cut loose. But the 9mm rounds of the rapid fire had even less effect on the writhing howlers. Crouching on the beamer, Christy weaved through the middle of the howlers, her bike popping up on its rear wheel for a moment as a howler grabbed her saddlebags. Machine and Muti battled for only a split second until the straps burst. As the bags went flying, Christy streaked away.
Our turn.
Floor it, Ryan.
Mildred pulled out her revolver. Then she reached into one of the trading sacks and thrust something at Carl.
Here, cover the other side.
Looking down, Carl was astonished to see that he was now holding a gun. The Outlanders had armed him? Clumsily pulling back the hammer, Carl clutched the big boar weapon in both hands and watched as the impossible things rushed their way. He would wait until the very last second before shooting, to not waste a single precious charge of ammo.
Oh, shit!
Carl suddenly felt his stomach lurch at the sight of them, and shut his eyes tight before frantically pulling the trigger.
Chill him.
Gotta chill them all.
Screw this.
JB dropped the Uzi to the floor and swung up the shotgun. Banking sharply, Ryan sent the Hummer into a skid and went sideways past the howlers, just missing ramming one.
Shit!
As the other muties rushed closer, Ryan braked and shifted gears, suddenly going backward and straight past them. Furious over the trick, the howlers lunged after the escaping prey, but it was too late. Ryan pressed the gas pedal all the way down to the floorboards, and the big Hummer rocketed backward along the riverbed, rapidly building speed. As the howlers receded into the distance, Ryan applied some brake and swung the Hummer around to point forward once more. Changing gears, he started driving again, and soon caught up with the other companions. With their pale hair streaming in the wind, Doc and Jack appeared extremely unhappy about losing their roof, and Christy was hunched low over the handlebars of the BMW, as if the Howlers were still in hot pursuit. The entire rear fender of the Beamer was gone, the spinning tire now completely exposed. Keeping a safe distance, Ryan pulled alongside Christy, and she gave him a nod to let Ryan know she was okay.
That was close. What'd you call those again, pal?
Howlers.
Carl slumped into his seat, the blaster cradled in both hands.
Very bad.
Howlers? They weren't quite like howlers we've encountered before.
Good thing we're in Wags, because they move faster than most norms can run.
Suddenly, Ryan craned his neck to look around the inside of the Hummer.
Fire blast, now what? What's making that sound? Did the Wag take damage?
Sound?
Ryan braked to a stop. He got out to inspect the Hummer. Swinging around, the others returned to park nearby.
Trouble?
Jack sat with one arm hanging out of the Wag, the Colt in his fist.
Not sure yet.
Ryan pulled out the Sig Sauer, crouched, and warily checked under the vehicle. Christy pushed down the kickstand and gratefully slid off her machine.
Good thing we stopped.
She hurriedly opened her canteen and liberally poured the water all over her clothing.
I'm almost out of juice.
Already?
Yeah, Ryan. Fuel line got torn open when that thing...
Howler.
Right, those fuckers. When the howler that didn't quite seem like a howler ripped off my fender. Been leaking gas for the last mile. I'm soaked to the skin.
Better change your clothes, just in case you need to use a blaster.
There was no smell from the condensed fuel, but even with the water diluting it, the slightest spark could turn the woman into a human torch.
Change into what? That bastard snatched my backpack.
Christy, I think I have some stuff you can fit into.
Mildred climbed out of the Hummer. Opening the back, she pulled out a duffel bag and started removing clothing.
This shirt might be a little tight, but the pants should be okay.
Thanks, Mildred.
I'll fix that fuel line. Jack, keep a watch for any more howlers.
Got your back.
Do you need a hand, John Barrymore?
Getting a toolkit from the Hummer, JB looked up at the old man.
You better start lashing down everything, Doc, or else you'll start losing supplies at every bump.
Quiet! There it is again.
Now everybody started looking around as the strange sound returned once more. Something flew out from behind a mesa to streak directly along the riverbed.
Keep an eye on the sky, everybody.
Son of a bitch. That's it. What I saw before.
A plane.
Ryan took a step in that direction before stopping himself. They had just been in its shadow a heartbeat ago, and already the Skywag seemed far out of blaster range.
Nuking hell, just how fast does that thing go?
Gathering together, the companions watched as the biplane streaked above the riverbed, following its every curve. Just then, a group of howlers appeared from around a bend, and the little plane dove toward them. A powerful explosion ripped the ground apart, and the muties were engulfed in a fiery detonation.
Hey, toi!
As the inhuman bodies fell sprawling to the riverbed, the biplane circled around, only to swoop low and strafe the howlers with large-caliber rapid-fire.
Is that your Baron, Carl?
Yes!
Running forward, Carl waved his empty gun at the biplane.
Lady Traggart! Down here! My lady, I'm down here!
The two-winger headed directly for the shouting man.
Ah!
The man fell over, red blood spraying out from his wounds.
You fucking thief! She thinks you were attacking her!
Ryan began moving away from the Hummers.
Everybody run for cover!
The companions frantically scattered as the twin row of bullet holes stitched across the dried mud to hit the vehicles. The rounds ricocheted off the armored chassis of the black Hummer, but tore apart the inside of the coverless Hummer. The spare can of fuel ignited, and the Wag erupted into a fireball, throwing out a halo of burning debris.
Wow, fuck!
But if the companion's barrage of hot lead had any effect upon the Skywag, it wasn't readily apparent as the little plane climbed higher into the sky and vanished from sight. Lowering her ZKR, Mildred cracked the cylinder and started to reload.
My God, a biplane! I still can't believe it!
What kind is it, Millie?
JB swung the Uzi around behind his back. Pulling out his Navy long eyes, he scanned the sky.
What kind? Hell, I don't know, John. Those things disappeared long before my time.
Great.
Now, there was a cartoon strip with one, and they called it a sop with camel. But I honestly don't know if that was a joke or its real name. And I recall something about farms using them to dust crops.
Dust the crops?
To kill the bugs eating the plants, they used pesticides. Dust meant kill in those days.
Anything else, Mildred?
I'm sorry, Ryan. When I flew in planes, they were jetliners, bigger than 10 of your war wags, and crossed the whole continent in a few hours. That little thing would have rattled around loose in the cargo hold on a 747 jumbo jet. Carl?
He alive?
Mildred, could you go see what you could do?
Yeah, of course, Ryan.
Mildred grabbed her med kit from the Black Hummer and rushed over to the fallen man.
Fire blast.
Ryan pulled out the Sig Sauer and checked the clip. Two rounds remained inside. Rummaging in a pocket, he found some loose shells and started pressing them into the clip. The burning Hummer exploded once more.
This ain't no joke, Dream.
Indeed not, Master Lauren.
Kneeling by the groaning Carl, Mildred saw that the man was cradling his left arm.
Here, let me, Carl.
Gently, she pried away his fingers. She inspected the wound.
Oh, this is nothing serious, Carl. See? The lead went clear through. No arteries are hit, and the bone is intact. You were lucky. This could have been a lot worse.
Mildred opened her bag to pull out some bandages and a bottle of shine.
Now this will hurt.
Life is pain.
Carl's face suddenly went strangely immobile. As Mildred washed and cleaned the wound, she studied his blank expression. She had unfortunately seen that look before on slaves who were constantly whipped by their taskmasters. The poor bastards had learned to disconnect their minds and think about something else while they were being brutalized. It was the hard face of animal survival. She began wrapping the wound with a clean bandage.
Why did the one-eyed man...
Ryan?
Yes, Ryan. Why did he ask you about the angel? Are you a healer or a white coat?
A little of each.
Mildred draped the sling over his neck.
You know old tech?
I know some. Here you go. Can you stand?
I think so.
Mildred helped him stand. His legs were wobbly, and she could see that his brief rest in the Hummer had been nowhere near enough. Carl needed food and sleep, in that order, and pretty damn quick. Rubbing his wounded arm, Carl stared at the woman.
You're an old one?
No, I just learned some stuff.
She helped him walk back to the Hummer.
There you go, Carl.
Thank you.
Ryan walked once around the Black Hummer, pleased to see that it was merely badly dented in spots, but otherwise not seriously damaged. A window was cracked, and the right side rear door refused to open, but that was about it.
Good. If we shift some of the supplies out of the rear section, the one wag will be able to carry everybody. How's the bike?
Christy stood from behind the Beamer.
Not a scratch, although the fuel tank's completely drained.
She pointed to a muddy puddle on the ground that shimmered with rainbow colors. JB headed for the motorcycle.
Dark night. I never did get a chance to fix that before. Jack, grab a can of fuel. Aces.
Jack went to the rear of the Hummer and pulled out a canister.
Got some stuff left.
Warily, Ryan walked closer to the burning wag and shook his head.
Damn. All that fuel and trade goods gone.
They could probably scav something when the flames died out, but that would take hours. He glanced at the sky. It would be night soon, and Ryan wanted to be moving long before it got dark, just in case there were any more howlers around. Tightening the cap on the fuel tank, Jack gave a thumbs up. JB sat on the Beamer.
Okay, let's give it a try.
Thanks for the fix, but somebody else can use that thing. I'll ride in the wag this time.
Why, dear lady?
The bike engine runs hot, and I don't want to risk touching that hot exhaust with my damp clothing.
No problem. The back mine now.
Fine by me.
Suddenly, Christy's red hair fanned out in every direction, and she felt her heartbeat quicken.
Something wrong, Christy?
Maybe, Jack. You know about my powers. They come and go.
By the three Kennedys, that accursed biplane has returned.
Everybody into the Hummer. We can't fight her on open ground.
Grabbing his hat, JB pelted for the Black Hummer, with Christy close behind. Tying his long hair into a ponytail and stuffing it under the collar of his leather jacket, Jack climbed onto the Beamer. Mildred slid a shoulder under Carl's armpit to hurry him along.
Move it or lose it, boy.
But I am her loyal Sekhman. Lady Treggert would not harm me.
I know what you are, and your lady has already tried to murder you once.
Maybe you're right about that.
He meekly followed her lead into the rear of the Hummer. As Carl slumped into a seat, Mildred handed him the weapon he dropped.
Here, you're either with us or with her. Now make your choice.
The man stared at the gun and ammo in his hands, clearly unable to decide what to do. Moving fast, Doug started throwing out boxes of supplies from the rear of the Hummer to make additional room, then climbed in through the opening. Ryan quickly slid behind the steering wheel. Christy was in the passenger seat, her S&W Model 640 in one hand, and the M16 assault rifle in the other. The rapid fire was down to its last few rounds, with no replacement ammo, but the long gun had a much greater range than her short-barreled handgun.
The very pistol! If the flares still work, those can easily H the bitch.
Great. Where is it, JP?
JP frantically looked at the bags in the rear of the Hummer.
Damned if I know.
Fire blast.
Casting a worried look at the sky, Jack impatiently waited for the others to get moving.
Why we wait so damn long?
Ryan, what are we waiting for? Speed is our armor.
Not yet, Doc.
A shadow moved across the windshield.
Fuck it.
Ryan slammed the gas pedal to the floor and took off in a spray of dust. The shockwave slapped the Hummer hard, almost forcing Ryan into the embankment. It took all of his strength to regain control and get back in the middle of the riverbed.
Shit!
JB watched the brownish cloud of dust thin out to reveal a gaping crater in the soil.
That was TNT. If one of those babies hits us, we're dead.
Leaning out the window, Christy fired the M16 at the sky. The little plane circled. Yanking the steering wheel back and forth, Ryan sent the Hummer zigzagging down the riverbed. After a few moments, he hit the gas and raced straight for a while before braking hard and swinging randomly left and right again.
Faster, mighty chariot! Onward! Ever onward!
I'm trying, Doc!
Suddenly, Jack zipped past the Hummer on the motorcycle, then swung past in front of the wag and dropped behind it.
Can we outrun her?
No way in hell, old man.
Damn it.
JB aimed his Uzi. The hot brass arched from the flickering ejector port and hit the ceiling of the Hummer to ricochet to the floor.
Any smoke, friends?
Christy triggered the M16.
Gaia, damn it.
Dropping it to the floor, she raised her revolver in both hands and tried again.
Smoke, friends, or any other wag?
Shit!
Responding to the adrenaline rush of battle, Carl started to load his borrowed blaster, but then lowered the weapon.
I can!
What? What, Carl? Not even to save your own damned ass?
But she is my lady!
Who's trying to kill you?
Maybe she doesn't know I'm among you outlanders. If she did, she surely wouldn't be doing this.
You've got to be kidding me.
But she is my lady!
I don't want to hear this shit!
Tears flowed down his cheeks as Carl dropped the revolver and slumped in his seat, uncaring of how the battle ended.
Oh, for the love of God!
Slapping in a fresh clip, JB stared at the sick man as if he were insane. But Mildred, despite her frustration, understood the conflict of emotions he had to be suffering. Eunuchs often fixated on their masters, and Carl had been beaten down for so long, he couldn't strike back any more than a whipped dog. Treggert had taken away his manhood in every sense, and Mildred felt a true hatred for the Baroness.
Shit!
Ryan raced for the embankment. Jack got out of the way and leapt ahead. Just before ramming the soil, he veered straight across the riverbed for the opposite side. Dirt flew just ahead of the Hummer, a rain of debris and shrapnel falling to pepper the wag.
Ah! Fire blast!
Savagely turning the wheel, Ryan skirted the blast crater, barely missing slipping inside by inches.
Damn! This bitch is good with those bombs!
Too fucking good!
Until they reached open ground, the Hummer and bike were trapped like bullets in the barrel of a gun, with nowhere to go but straight ahead. Easy meat for this Treggert and her sky bombs.
Christy!
What, Doc?
The Steyr, Ryan's long blaster. Give it to Mildred so that she may clip the wings of this diabolic Icarus!
Looking sideways, Christy blinked. But Mildred got the idea.
Well, she is the best shot.
Yeah, and only that rifle has the range to hit the angel.
Take it, Mildred!
Reaching out, Christy undid the strap and pulled the Steyr free.
Here you go, Mildred. Thanks.
shit!
A fireball blossomed in their wake, the halo of debris striking the rear of the armored wag.
Just stones and dirt. But if that blast had been packed with nails...
We get the idea, John.
Wrapping the strap around her forearm to help steady her aim, Mildred clicked off the safety. Looking through the telescopic sight, she altered the focus and tried to ignore her sweating palms.
I guess there's no way for you to steady your driving, Ryan.
Hell no, Mildred.
Maybe she's out. How many bombs does she carry on board that thing, Carl? Carl, how many bombs?
A dozen. Sometimes more.
Damn!
Mildred tied off her riot of beaded plaits with a handkerchief.
I'm ready.
Just a few more ticks.
Ryan sent the Hummer all over the riverbed. The Black Wag and Jack wove a tapestry of misdirection along the ground, constantly changing their speeds and directions. The Angel passed by overhead, but didn't drop anything this time, clearly unable to zero in on a target. Slowly, Ryan was starting to get a feel for this new enemy. The biplane seemed to have a lot of good points. He had never seen anything move so fast, but it wasn't very maneuverable. It could only attack in straight lines and gentle curves. That gave the wagon bike a telling advantage, but was it enough? Reaching a smooth stretch of dirt, Ryan eased up on the gas and held a steady course. The riverbed looked rough up ahead, so this might be their last chance.
Do it, Mildred!
JB slammed open the Hummer's roof panel.
Here goes nothing.
Spreading her legs wide for a better stance, Mildred stood and raised the long gun to try to find a tiny speck moving in the orange sky. The rolling clouds behind the biplane made it difficult for her to get a clear sighting. Then the handkerchief came loose, and her beaded hair whipped madly around her face.
Shit! Not that again!
Shifting her aim to slightly behind the sputtering bright flowers from the machine gun, Mildred held her breath. There seemed to be no reaction. No puff of smoke, no explosion of flame.
Oh well.
She started to calmly reload the weapon. And then the Angel abruptly swung aside and headed out into the desert. Mildred waited expectantly, but the sky wag kept going this time until it dwindled into a speck in the sheer distance.
Ah! Woohoo!
Dropping back into her seat, she released the long gun as JB closed the roof.
Well, she's gone, but she can come back at any time.
Do any damage, Mildred?
I don't think so, Christy. I think I just scared the hag off.
Highly unlikely, madam. Old pilots and bold pilots, remember?
Do you think she was just being cautious, Doc?
Yes.
We'll know soon enough. Gotta find someplace with cover. Any forests around here, Carl?
Huh?
Any forests around here?
Forests? Yeah, sure. There's some heavy green that way. To the north. Half day's ride on horseback.
About another 80 miles or so, Ryan.
Right, JB. Say, less than 2 hours in the wag?
Sounds about right.
North it is, then.
Slowing the Hummer to a crawl, Ryan started working the wag up the sloped side of the embankment. Coming to a halt, Jack pulled out his gun and nervously waited for the Hummer to reach the crest and send down the tow line. This peaceful-looking riverbed was really not someplace that he wanted to be left alone in for any length of time. Clamping a hand on her bleeding leg, Sandra tried to hold the joystick steady. She couldn't believe they had hit her with a long blaster. It was incredible. There she'd been diving in for the kill when something burst through the fuselage and her leg suddenly felt as if it had been smashed with a white-hot club. Pulling off her scarf, she tied a tourniquet around the wound, the pressure making it hurt even worse.
Ugh, Black, just those outlanders gonna pay for this. Along with that traitor's little... Bastard, Carl. I trust that eunuch with my life, and he turns on me in the first opportunity. Stinking yellow guts better start running now, because if I ever get my hands on him, not even the dogs will eat his carcass once I'm done.
Studying the world below, Sandra tried to locate one of the landmarks on her chalk map, but nothing seemed familiar. Suddenly, the skin began to itch, and she glanced upward to see the roiling chem clouds dangerously close.
Hell!
Sandra eased the biplane into a level flight and began to carefully descend. The winds were tricky this high up. She had to stay alert for downdrafts that could flip the Angel over or simply tear it apart like a child plucking the wings off a fly. Slowly, the pins and needle sensations went away. She gently rubbed a hand on her aching leg. She had to stay awake, but there was a growing cold in her belly, and she knew that wasn't good. She'd lost a lot of blood. As the plane continued onward, she slipped into the arms of Morpheus. Sandra started awake as the angel put the wheel off the rocky ridge surrounding the crater.
Home. I made it.
But she was dropping too fast.
Damn it!
She fought the plane back up, then leveled it out. She clutched the joystick in both hands and struggled to fight through the growing fog that again clouded her mind.
No, stay awake, you bitch!
Biting her lower lip until she drew blood, Sandra used the pain to keep herself conscious long enough to turn the biplane into the wind and drop the flap. In the distance, a group of Sekmen came running from the tents. Carter was in the front, armed with a long gun. The rest of the workers were carrying plastic buckets full of sand in case the angel burst into flames. Sandra slumped over in the wicker seat and finally allowed herself to fall into a warm, velvety blankness that seemed to have no bottom. Maintaining his grip on the steering wheel and a death watch on the sky, Ryan didn't relax until they were driving underneath the thick canopy of the northern forest. If Lady Tregart wanted them now, she would have to send in Sekmen on horseback, and that was simply not going to happen. According to Carl, the Vill was just recovering from a famine, and the Sekmen were down to about 20, maybe 30 in total. 20 walking the wall around Thunderville, and a dozen in the armed camp around Lady Tregart's workshops and the Angel. Now that sounded like a major hard sight. For all intents and purposes, those were two different Vills. Night had fallen, so Ryan and Jack were using the headlights to drive through the dense forest. Everybody knew that they would reveal their position from above, but according to Mildred's best guess, Tregart probably couldn't fly at night. She needed landmarks to find her way to a target and back again. Apparently, nobody at Thunderville had ever heard of a compass. That was bad news for Lady Tregart and good news for the companions. Ryan noticed a silvery light ahead through the foliage. Slowing, Ryan could see the overhead coverage stopped at the edge of a wide, grassy field. He set the brake and exited the wag, long rifle in hand. Christy, JB, and Mildred were right behind him, with Doc unfolding himself from the cramped cargo compartment. Slumped over against the closed window, Carl was asleep, occasionally twitching from something disturbing in his troubled dreams. A few seconds later, Jack parked alongside the Black Hummer and killed his headlights. The nuke batteries would supply power almost forever, but the lamps had a limited life and needed to be conserved whenever possible. Walking almost to the edge of the woods, the companions studied the wide-open vista of flatland spreading in front of them to the horizon. The friends saw a field of dried grass, illuminated by the moon. A few trees were scattered here and there, and there was a small pond with what looked like a salt lick nearby. But not much else.
Look safe.
Christy rested a hand on Ryan's neck and gently massaged the knotted muscles.
We'll camp here. We can always drive back into the deep woods for cover if necessary.
We got any MREs, Mildred?
For a couple of meals, sure.
Any self-heats?
Nope, it's just stew and spaghetti tonight, Jack.
Head ways.
Going back to the wag, Ryan killed the headlights, but not the amber parking lights, to offer some illumination. With Christy standing guard, Mildred reached in the window and woke Carl.
Hey, wake up.
What?
Doc and Jack dug out the MRE food packs from the rear compartment. JB had unearthed the remaining fuel cans and topped off the bike before pouring the last of the condensed fuel into the tank of the Hummer. Checking the dashboard, Ryan frowned at the gauge.
Less than half a tank. That's not good.
We lost a lot of juice when the other Hummer got bombed. Gonna be a long walk back to the place where we first got it.
Any sign of that very pistol?
Not so far, Ryan.
Let's check everything.
Sounds good to me.
The two men went to work, but after several minutes of opening bags and boxes, looking under the seats and inside sleeping bags, it was soon painfully clear that the flare gun wasn't present. Their best weapon against the Angel had been destroyed with the other Hummer. Hunger finally drove the two men to join the others. The trader had always said that empty bellies made empty heads. They would think better on a full stomach. There was a chill to the evening air, so the companions had spread their bedrolls on the ground and formed a circle in front of the Hummer to savor the heat radiating from the grill. Everybody had jackets except for Carl, so the sec man used the new knife he had been given to cut a slit in a blanket to make himself a crude poncho, tying a spare piece of rope around his waist to cinch it shut. The MREs were passed around, and Carl stared in wonder at the Mylar envelopes as the others took their choice, leaving him the last pack. Hesitantly, he took the pack and held it, unsure of what to do next. He had eaten canned goods before, but nothing like this.
So what do we do? Mix them all together, or...
That's your share, Carl. We each get our own.
Carl stared at the envelope in frustration. There were symbols on the material, letters he thought they were called, but what the markings meant, he had no idea. Using the plastic knife included, Ryan began to spread the Gray Army cheese over the salted crackers, then noticed the sec man's obvious confusion. Clearly, the man couldn't read.
That one's coffee. Just add hot water. That one is sugar. Powdered milk. That one is chewing gum. Sweet stuff right after the meal. It's good for your teeth. The little thing is cheese and crackers. The box is dessert, usually some kind of nut cake. The big envelope is the main course. You got spaghetti. That little tube has more cheese to sprinkle on top.
Huh?
Here, allow me.
Doc pulled out a knife. Carl watched in fascination as the old man sliced open the big shiny pouch. An unknown aroma rose from inside, and Carl angled the package, about to try to see inside using the amber lights of the Hummer. Finally successful, he recoiled in horror at the sight of what looked like dead white worms in congealed blood, along with several unidentifiable soggy globes.
This is food?
Jack passed over his already opened pack.
Trade you?
Okay, I guess.
As Jack dug into the spaghetti and meatballs, Carl warily looked at the contents of the replacement bag. This time he smelled meat. Lifting the silver pouch, he saw that it was full of chunks of cooked beef, mixed with some veggies and a thick brown gravy. Eagerly, he dug into his beef stew with gusto.
Food fit for a baron! Black dust, do you eat like this every day?
More often than not. Pass us all, Christy. So, Carl, were you the pilot of that crashed plane?
No. I was with the three other sec men sent after the demon on horseback. I wasn't supposed to leave the airfield, but something went wrong, and it flew away on the wind.
Airfield? Now, that's a word I haven't heard in ages.
That's the word that Lady Treggert uses. A big place inside a blast crater. The ridge that goes around is so high, we're always surprised when the angel flies over.
Why doesn't she just wheel it outside, then?
Can't. There's only a door in the gate for passage, and that's just big enough for a man on horseback.
No other gate?
No, just the one. Could I have some of that salt, too?
Here you go.
Thanks.
And you were supposed to bring the demon back through that?
No, destroy it. But we were ordered to save the engine. Lady Treggert can build more demons. Those are easy, but not the engine.
The companions exchanged pointed looks. Regretfully, Carl laid the clean Mylar pouch aside.
How do you make coffee again?
Unfolding a plastic cup, JB showed the sec man how to mix the French roast crystals into some cold water from a canteen. As the mixture began to softly bubble, Carl felt his eyes go wide at the smell of fresh coffee. The water was heating itself without a fire?
It's magic.
It's tech. So, what was special about the engine?
Don't know. It was big, 12 cylinders, but light as wood. It was just as shiny as steel, but she called it all low or something like that.
Aluminum?
Yes, that was the word.
Carl cradled the plastic cup preciously. Coffee was for barons, not sec men. He had only smelled the stuff before, while standing guard behind Lady Treggert's chair at dinner. It tasted good.
So, only the one engine left, eh?
Nah, she's got six. And Carter said she knows a place where there's hundreds more.
The companions all stopped eating and drinking. Carl didn't notice.
The problem was something to do with the wings. All of the other warbirds crashed after a few man lengths, but this one flew and flew and flew.
A small part of Carl felt it was wrong to discuss such things with Outlanders, but they had saved his life twice, and he felt honor-bound to answer their questions. It wasn't as if they were asking him anything important, like how to get into the Ville or where the spare blasters were hidden.
I guess Lady Treggart solved that wing trouble.
Which means she can make more. At least six to start with. And after that, who knows how many.
The sec man suddenly went stiff and thrust his hand forward. Dropping his coffee, Jack dodged out of the way as a knife went straight past his head and slammed into a tree. Pulling his gun, Jack thumbed back the hammer, then noticed the rest of the companions looking behind him. Turning, Jack saw that the knife was sticking through the twitching body of a fat spider, a greenish fluid dripping from its needle-sharp mandibles.
Sorry, that's a Dakota. One bite and you go perm-crazed.
Sounds like a neurotoxin.
Mildred went over and looked at the dead insect. The punctured body was dripping a clear ichor that she would expect to see in any large insect. Thankfully, it wasn't that weird urine-yellow blood from the artificial bioweapons that had been set loose in the final days of Skydark. But those were incredibly difficult to kill, which wasn't surprising since they were genetically designed biological weapons. With a calloused thumb, Jack eased down the hammer on his Colt.
Thanks.
Going over to the tree, the albino teen pulled out the blade. Wiping it clean on the grass, he ran the flame of his butane lighter along the steel for a few seconds, just to be sure, then flipped it back. The knife went tumbling straight for the ground between Carl's boots. The sec man caught it by the handle and slipped the weapon back under his poncho.
Thanks.
Jack nodded at the fellow blademan and sat again. His coffee gone, the youth pulled out a needle and thread to start repairs on the rip in the collar of his battered leather jacket. The visibility seemed poor under the amber lights, but he proceeded with the task easily, his red eyes wide and untroubled.
Well, even the one angel is going to make the other barons surrender.
We ain't at war with nobody. Lady Treggart just wants to protect our Ville by acing the barons planning to jack us. And we take some triv as punishment, that's all.
Unwrapping a bar of compressed fruitcake, Brian started chewing on the resilient dessert. He got the basic idea. Segment on horseback raided the ruins of the Ville she attacked from the air and took his tribute everything of value. After only a couple of raids like that, Thunderville would have enough guns and horses to attack anybody they wished. This Lady Treggart wasn't stockpiling supplies. She was building an army. And with even the one angel paving the way from above, who could stop her? Maybe she couldn't damage a pre-dark tank with her sky bombs, but to anything else in the Deathlands, Lady Treggart and the angel would be death incarnate.
Sky bombs.
Hellfire. Just the sight of a plane would make most Ville surrender.
Tales of the nuke war were burned into the memory of everybody sucking air. Repeated by mothers, as well as sec men, and gaudy sluts in bars. Sky bombs had changed the shape of the planet. One big nuke had made the capital of America into Washington Hole, a circular bay that still glowed green at night. JB slid off his glasses and polished the lenses with a soft, clean cloth he kept just for that purpose.
You got any idea about range, Millie?
It's probably a couple of hundred miles at the most, depending on payload and weather.
Weather?
Planes go slower in damp air, Jack. It's thicker and harder to get through. Dry desert air is the best air for flying.
You know such tech? I heard Lady Treggart say the very thing once and...
Carl started to reach for his back, then went silent.
And she had you whipped to keep quiet, didn't she? And this is the woman you say merely wants to protect the Ville and not jack other barons?
Sounds like a cold heart to me.
No, Lady Treggart? But can it be true? Is my mistress a cold heart? Yesterday the world made sense. Today I'm not sure of anything anymore. I don't know what I believe.
Oh, Carl, believe anything you want. But unless something is done, this Treggart will soon be the first Emperor of America.
How far away is your bill?
Your leg? Less than a day.
Okay, enough chit-chat. Carl, go lay down on the rear seat of the Hummer and get some sleep. I'll check on you in a few hours.
Trained to take orders from a woman, Carl obediently stood and shuffled off to collapse inside the Pedark Wag. Within minutes, he was fast asleep.